Welcome to Broad Little Lies with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. We are here to talk about Season 2, Episode 5 of Big Little Lies, titled Kill Me. Also, in big news, this episode starred the wonderful Shandy Lamperley.
Yeah!
That's right. At least my backside.
At least your backside.
Yeah.
Which... I have to tell you, I had it on closed captioning while I was watching it, so I posted the screen cap on my Instagram story last night, and the screen cap was, it said, look at this view, and Ed goes, it is pretty, and then Greg messaged me and said, are they talking about her booty?
Yes.
It is suggestive in that way.
And I will have you know that in that scene, the uncut version of that scene, I do start out in front of them.
Yeah, so. I would actually okay, so now you have to tell us more about your scene. Let's just do the local stuff first because I want to hear all about it.
Inquiring minds, mostly us, want to know desperately, and we've been waiting for a very long time to finally get the dirt. So, yes. Phil.
All right. I can't even remember what I said on the broadcast, but whatever. I'm sure I've forgotten by now anyway. So... okay, so they call us to do the scene, and we were told that the scene is supposed to be at like Esalen, which is like a hot springs down in Big Sur. It's super expensive, so I've never been. So I was like really excited that we were going to finally go to Esalen. And fun fact, I was just Googling their website. Like, they have the Esalen Institute. They do like continuing education and workshops and some like sort of new agey type things. But I happened to find this workshop that they're putting on. It's like, you can get 26 hours of continuing education. But it's called, the workshop title is Hold Me Tight Workshop for Couples. I was like, that sounds like maybe a source of inspiration. It's actually going on. It's like coming up if anyone's interested in signing up.
Okay.
But, it's super long. Anyway,
I'm excited about this.
So excited! I was excited. We were going to Esalen. We were not going to Esalen. So they took us down, did like, you know, hair and makeup. That's when I was in the trailer. Like they gave us stuff to wear, and they didn't do makeup, but they did a little bit of hair. And I was in there with another woman who was doing the scene with us, like another extra, and she was like elbowing me, like, look to your right. And that's when I looked over and saw Adam Scott, and that was the first, like, oh my God. And then they took us down to where we were shooting, which is, it's like down Highway 1 going towards Big Sur, but it's way before the Bixby Bridge. And it's just this amazing property. I don't know if people actually live there or if they just rent it out or what, but it's just like, it's huge and it's beautiful and it's like right on the cliff, basically, with a lot of different sort of buildings. And when we got there, everyone, like the crew was telling everyone as they arrived to like be careful, because in between the pavers, like the paving stones, there was this sort of this plant called baby tears. And the owners of the property had instructed them very strictly to be careful of that because it's really fragile. And so you're not supposed to walk on it. So it's like in between these things that you're walking on, but you're not supposed to walk on it. Okay. So we heard that in the morning. And when they told it to Adam Scott, he made some joke about like, oh, well, good thing they put it where you're supposed to walk. And so then they're like getting us ready, and originally they were looking for couples, which is why they called me and Frank. And then they decided that me, Frank, and this other person would like work at Esalen, and then the other couples would be in the scenes when they're doing like the couples therapy. Mm-hmm. And so originally they were going to have Frank carry in the luggage. So basically it's like a, you know, somebody working there who shows them in and like shows them to their room and just like carries the luggage.
Yeah, and Frank, and Frank was like, oh, in case anybody is new listener, not a broadcast crossover listener.
Right. Thank you. So he was like standing ready to go. Reese Witherspoon and Adam Scott weren't like standing yet. But they're probably doing whatever actors do to get ready. And they decided that actually they wanted me to do it. And the reason I heard was that they were looking for somebody, what was the word they used? Not eclectic, eccentric, I think. Yes. Somebody eccentric. They wanted an eccentric look. So apparently that's what I have.
Well, they did. You are a redheaded lefty.
Yeah.
It's true. It's very true. Rare. True. So they stand me up and I, you know, I'm standing there with like, you know, the empty suitcases that I'm carrying down. And then they decide that, oh, actually the director wants to give me a line. And so they like whisk me away, outfit me with the mic and everything. And they're telling me like, okay, so you're gonna like, you know, bring them in and you're gonna tell them to be careful of the baby tears. It's really fragile, that plant. And then like show them, you know, to their room and tell them like where it is. And so I'm like kind of like a deer in headlights at this point, because this is really cool. But also they're like, you know, something like that. It doesn't have to be verbatim. Like, no. Like, you don't understand. I'm not an actress. Like, it actually does have to be verbatim. Like, you have to tell. I'm not like improvising here. Of course, this was all just my like inner monologue. But so they tell me more or less what to say. We get ready. I'm like, so I'm standing in front of Reese Witherspoon and Adam Scott, and like there's a camera like shooting us from the front. And basically, like I say my line and then sort of let them pass, because they're obviously a little bit more important for the shot than me. And they like walk down. And that's how the scene, that part of the scene goes. And so we shot that a couple of times. And it was super trippy because every time we'd have to go back up, somebody from the crew would like take the empty suitcase from me and carry them back up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we did that a few times, and then from there they like go off. And then, so that took a while to shoot. And then the rest of the day was spent essentially with them shooting the therapy stuff. And so they were in this other little like structure, this, you know, right, whatever. There are multiple little buildings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're in that place where the therapy happens, and we're like sort of off to the side. So I didn't really see like what was happening in there. I just knew they were shooting some like the therapy session essentially, but it's like group therapy. And so that took a long time. And then occasionally they would have us like Frank and myself, like at certain points they would give us like a stack of towels to like walk from like one building to the other, kind of in the background as if we were actually at work there.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So like there was a possibility that Frank and I would have both been in the scene. But yeah, so that took basically all day. And then when it was getting towards like the sun setting, that's when they had like a hard act to go and film the scene of the car crash with Nicole Kidman that we saw in the first episode.
The second episode.
Or the second episode. Yeah.
Yeah, second episode.
So it was really interesting to see like an entire day's work and all the money. Cause like I still like, so they cut my line, but like I still got paid for that.
Yeah, right. That counts, man.
Yeah. So all of that filming, like all of those hours of work condensed down into like 5 seconds. It was crazy. Even like the therapy thing. And like, I can understand. I mean, it's kind of a bummer that you only see my backside and that my line was cut, but I mean, whatever, it's fine. But I was really surprised that the therapy thing was over so quickly. Also, I really thought that they were like gonna do more with it, because then it's like, well, why did that scene, like, why did they even have it at all? I mean, I guess it shows that like they're trying and whatever, but like it was just over in such a fast blink of an eye. But yeah, that was the whole day shoot.
It's like that felt so weird to me that it was so short. And I can't think it's just because of the bias of like, we knew this was coming. We knew you were in the scene and we had sort of built it up in our heads. Like I can't think that it was just like that bias coming into play. I think it just, the scene felt really like unnaturally short given how much time that show likes to take with things.
Totally. It's like, if you're not paying attention, you don't even realize it happened. And my first thought, of course, is like, oh my God, it was so terrible that they like couldn't use it. I really don't think that it was that, because the other stuff, like all the stuff at the group therapy was also completely cut also. So
yeah, I think the episode was just too long and they had to make decisions in the cutting room. And I think it was almost like it became a catalyst for like the two conversations that Madeline and Ed have in the car going and coming back.
Totally. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Which I can concede and understand is more important. That's fine.
Right.
But it's just, yeah, it was kind of surreal. It was like all the But like at the end of the day, I still acted in a scene with Reese Witherspoon and Adam Scott, and I still like have those memories, and nothing can take that away. God damn it!
Yes,
but it was fun too because I posted on the broadcast Instagram a picture of me and Frank from that day, and then like the actual scene on HBO, and I've been like sitting on that picture for over a year now because that's the thing, like we weren't supposed to take pictures, of course, of like the set or anything like that. And then so at the end of the day filming, we asked like the guy, I don't even remember what his job title was, but the guy who had been like handling us, we asked if we could just take like a selfie, and he was basically like, well, you know, you're not supposed to, but if you just don't like post it on social media, you know, until the show comes out, like, you know, everyone's gonna like, well, you know, turn a blind eye. But because it was the time of day where the sun was just kind of crazy, like we were trying to take these selfies and not be seen taking selfies because we weren't supposed to be taking the selfies, and the sun was crazy. And so literally when I looked back the other day, every single picture in there like that I took is terrible, and we're like squinting, and it's just like the lighting is terrible. They're just so bad. So I tried to doctor it up and make it a little bit better, but you can see the polo shirts that we're wearing so that was like where we were working, quote unquote, which of course doesn't say Esalen. It says, let me see, no, I can't even remember.
Osana.
But even that was fun because they had just to see like wardrobe and how that works. And they had that stuff just in like various sizes. And it was kind of like a last minute decision too, because originally they wanted us because we were a couple and then they decided, oh no, we need some works here. Like, yeah, it was pretty cool.
I'm wondering if, cause this was supposed to be like a couple's weekend kind of thing, right? You're carrying their bags and Madeline's talking about like the fireplace and everything. So I wonder if the whole everything was originally different and their scenes that are in the car end up happening like at the retreat place or whatever, and then they reworked it. Could that be possible?
I have no idea, but you make a good point. Like the way that it comes off in the show is like they went down for like 2 hours and then drove back up, whereas like they were clearly staying overnight.
Right.
And that's how a lot of these, like a lot of these workshops at Esalen are like weekend workshops or like 5-day workshops, which interestingly enough costs like, I mean, the cost is kind of insane for a weekend workshop. It's like $400, $500 if you're sleeping in a sleeping bag. So if you actually get a room, it's like, you're talking over $1,000. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, that's awesome. So tell us about Reese and Adam. Did they talk to you at all?
So I was standing in front of them and like, you know, I turned around and they shook my hand and introduced themselves, which was funny because like, you know, when Adam Scott tells you like, hi, my name's Adam, you're like, again, internal monologue. I know. But thank you for acting like you're just a normal person. Like, that's nice. And so, you know, I introduced myself. They were both super nice. And actually, that was one of the things that I really remember from the whole experience was that everyone was just super nice. From like, the caterers, you know, to the director, to the crew, to the actual, like, you know, freaking movie stars. Like, everyone was super nice. And everyone called us all by our first names, which I'm so impressed. And I think we talked about that before. I'm sure it's like a skill that they purposefully work on, but like, it's still really impressive.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was really fun. Yeah, it was a really, really fun experience. They were just so like courteous and nice to everyone.
Sweet. You'll have to try again for season 3.
Yeah, actually. I mean, if they do a season 3 and they still like film it here and call for extras, we will 100% answer that call.
Yes. And I would imagine they probably, like in shows like that, they put such a like a stake in having local people be extras that I wonder that if you're like in for one season, they'll like invite you back, like, you know, like you're in, like you can like.
I think they had said that, you know, even for season two, I think that they had said basically if you were in season one or if you were an extra in season one, like you, I don't know. I can't remember if it was that you didn't have to wait in line like to give them your application. There was something.
It's like you get a fast
There was
pass.
Something and don't, right, exactly. Don't quote me on that exactly, but I do remember there was something where it was like if you were in the first season, then you had better chances or something, or you didn't. Yeah.
Cool.
So
makes sense. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
You should be like, hey, Adam, remember me?
Hey.
We're on a first name basis.
Remember we're on a first name basis.
Right. He'll be like, I learned your name for a day and then forgot it because, like, there's only
but
so
you're
much.
Not, your name
in
isn't
their
something
brain.
That's more common. Like, Shandy
right.
is
like
not exactly.
Like Sarah.
Yeah.
Or Emily
true.
Or like something very, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's very exciting.
Very exciting. Do you guys want to get into the discussion? Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Shandy. I'm sure that we're going to randomly like ask you more things about it and probably maybe talk about it on the broadcast tomorrow too. So without further ado, what did you guys think of the episode overall? It was a lot slower pace, but there was so much in it.
Yeah, there definitely was. I took a lot of notes.
I did as well.
Yeah.
We had a lot more. This episode definitely, I liked it. And I think it pushed the story ahead a lot. And we're going to see, I mean, I don't want to talk about the previews for next week, but it looks like things are moving rather quickly now. But at the same time, the episode didn't have that like overall feeling of, like frenetic energy like some of the other ones have had, I guess. Does that make sense? Coming off of, you know, an episode where there was a giant disco party for an 8-year-old.
Right. It was more of a slow burn.
Right.
But a simmer.
We started off with Jane dreaming about like the incident that happened, and we've seen Madeline dreaming about it. We've seen Celeste dreaming about it. We've seen, I think, everybody dream about it except for Renata, right? Or Renata's even had flashbacks to it, right? And to me, I rewatched it. My husband and I both rewatched it based on this theory. Is to me, I think that we're seeing subtle differences in this scene from different characters' point of view.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally, totally right. And I like how there's a different element that they add each time we see the scene. Like, yes, it's very clearly through a different lens because it's seen through a different character's perspective. But like, there's just subtle different. I think it's just like there's these little textural things that get added each time we see it, even though, you know, it's every different characters through their lens. So there is subtly different just because of that, but there's different elements of sound. There's a little more murmur that gets added with each week. And you can start to hear a bit of like what they're saying. Whereas I think the first time we saw it was completely silent, which is just like one of those cool things. And I think just throughout the series, the show plays with that, the idea of sound and how we perceive sound with image. But I love how just, like each episode we get a little more about how each character reacted after Perry's fall. And I'm excited to get the full scope by the last episode.
Yes.
And so do you think, because as you guys have both kind of mentioned, every time it's sort of from somebody else's point of view, and this was episode 5. There are 5 of them, the Monterey 5. So, like, in theory, we've now gotten through each one. So, like, what will it be then for the next 2?
Ooh, do you think we'll get it from Perry's perspective?
We need Elizabeth to wake up and give us, like, you know, touch something that Perry's touched so we can see
it. I mean, I kind of hope not, because I feel like that'd be super lame and super cheesy.
It would be super lame and super cheesy, but, you know, still. So the screen is just black for the first, like, 30 seconds of the next week's episode.
Right. You just see, like, pushing at women, and then all of a sudden, like, just over and over and over and the stairs and black. But Shandy, that is a good point that we now have seen it through each one's lens. So we've been through five. So now what is it going to be next week? Are they going to move away from this motif, or are they going to, like, double down and it's going to be something even bigger?
I think, right? Personally, I think until the truth comes out, we're going to double down on the motif. But, okay, so who do we want to talk about first? Do we want to talk about the Celeste Mary Louise stuff?
Yeah, that's pretty intense. I feel like now we've called out to therapists to kind of get, like, what is the best way to do therapy. Now we need to call out to our lawyer friends. What does everyone think of everyone's
what is the
strategy?
Best way to lawyer?
What is the best way to lawyer? And because I thought that in and of itself was sort of fascinating. And it's also, it's like adds a layer to it that when you think that, like, Celeste herself is a lawyer. But then, of course, like, every type of law is, like, you know, a specific type of law, but just how they sort of explain that it's a little bit different for custody. You don't want to, you know, have outbursts and.
Right.
Yeah. But I think it was great that they actually reminded us that Celeste is a lawyer, because she's sure not, like, in the headspace or acting like someone that has a good command of, like, character and composure and, like, their ability to control themselves in a crowd.
Yeah. Agreed. And I don't think that, like, I think with anything, especially, you know, when you're in anything that's going to involve, like, negotiations or whatnot, I guess litigation, negotiations, et cetera, it's all about how your strategy can best the strategy on the other sides, right? Mm-hmm. So it just, to me, it just seemed like Mary Louise and Dennis O'Leary had one strategy, and that was to play the sympathetic grandma, because that's, you know, she doesn't really have legal rights over them right now, right? She's not a parent. So that was kind of her strategy. And I think that given Celeste's current headspace, her lawyer was probably right when she was just like, just sit there and don't say anything.
Yeah.
Don't respond.
I think, I mean, Mary Louise, yes, she's playing the sympathetic grandmother, but while also simultaneously poking the bear, as she is so good at doing.
She is so good at doing that. And we've got to.
Fiona agrees.
Yeah.
Fiona's like, you guys, you're missing some very important points. And if you just, like, shut up for a minute, I will tell you. but I will say, and I started to notice it, I think, listening back to last week's episode and, like, how a few of the things that you guys said, but a lot of times, and I think what makes Mary Louise's character so fascinating is the fact that, like, you hate her methods and you know that she is, like, a crazy person, but a lot of times she is right.
Right.
And you can agree with what she's saying, even though you don't agree with her motives and why. And that's what I think is just so fascinating about her character and what she does for the series and the plot overall.
Right. Because right now we don't see anything that makes her straight up evil.
Mm-hmm.
We just know that she seems like she's somewhat psycho.
Right. That she's absolutely, like, pathological. Like, but what she says makes sense when you actually remove all of that stuff and just look at it at face value.
Yeah. What did we think about her telling Max and Josh what was going on? Because I don't know if, I mean, I'm all for being open and honest with your kids, and I think she handled it well where she told them, like, just, you know, tell them the truth, don't say mean things about grandma. But I don't know if I would have told them, like, hey, kids, I'm going out to go fight your grandma for custody of you. I don't know if I would have done that.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of, I don't know. It's sort of reminiscent of when people, when parents divorce and maybe one or maybe both parents sort of like try to manipulate their kids to like pit them against the other. And like, to me, it felt a little bit like that. Where, yeah, I agree with you that like certain things she needs to be honest about and she needs to like explain to them in a way that's appropriate for their age and, you know, whatever they need to know. But it was maybe a little bit too far.
Right. The only thing, I think
they're still a little too young.
Right. The only thing that I can think that she might need to have told them about it would have been to prepare them for the fact that they were going to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Because exactly. She can't just like be like, hey, no. Kids, you know, you're going to go see somebody to talk to today. And like, you know, without giving them any kind of context. But because I feel like if she had done that to them, that's just going to add to their therapy bills in the future.
Yeah, no, definitely. But,
yeah, it just seemed to me like Celeste definitely is not thinking clearly. Although I guess she didn't have any Ambien intercourse this week or Ambien drunk driving or whatever. So power to her.
Yeah, she seemed to be on the straight and narrow this week. At least so we saw.
Although it was interesting with Ziggy gets bullied and Max and Josh stand up for him, which I have to say, I kind of loved that they went in there and they were like, leave my brother alone. And I thought,
I did too.
I know. I was like, you go, boys. Until, you know, they were using.
Until they put the kid in the hospital.
Right. Until they put the kid in the hospital.
They were used. But no, we saw how just the relationships between mothers and sons are different too, because Ziggy confesses to Jane, they said, my father's a rapist. And then he asks her all concerned, like, am I going to be like him? And then right after he's like, you know, do you like Corey? And she's like, yeah. And he goes, am I going to be like him? And it's very, like, very kid-like to just change the subject in the middle of the conversation.
Like, do you like Corey?
Yeah.
Him? Egg?
Egg? Her? But anyway, okay, so we have the Ziggy thing and, you know, she talks to him and she's got this, like, quiet, gentle way. And then, you know, Celeste is trying to find out and they're just like, stop being such a bitch, Mom.
Yeah.
I felt for her in that moment.
I felt for her too, but, and I don't have to deal with that because I'm not a mother, but how do you respond to that? Because I'm not sure that she really did a great job either of,
oh no,
are you supposed totally to meet them cool. with calm?
Yeah, she totally lost her cool.
I mean, it's way not okay for them to say that. But I feel like for one thing, like, she shouldn't get worked up. I mean, like,
oh, I'm totally guilty of this, like that.
To remain calm. But the other thing is, like, it's not just because she's her mom that they shouldn't call her a bitch.
Right.
Like, it's just language they shouldn't use. Like, anyone.
Yeah. Doesn't mean that if, you know, some girl is not your mother, you can go around calling her a bitch.
Well, of course, I don't think anybody is saying that it's only not okay because it was disrespectful to Mom, but there's also the added layer that they're like 9 years old and throwing the B word around too. I mean, there's just all
but
sorts
I just
of
thought there was a teachable moment on a more on a broader scale.
That
was
yes.
Probably. Like, so whenever, if my kid ever calls me a bitch, I'm going to remember Shandy said, handle it like this. And you know what? You're probably right. And I will absolutely sit down and do that.
Does not beget anger.
It's just, again, the differences between parents and kids. But at least for them, it had a happy ending, right? Where they all get to go kayaking with boring Corey.
They all got to go kayaking at Point Lobos, which is where Reese and Nicole were parked a couple of weeks ago. That little natural reserve. Yeah, shot at the same time. Side note, I don't think you can kayak there. It's like protected and shit, but you can dive there. So, maybe, but I've never seen a kayak stand. But anyway, that was like, huh, interesting. But they even call it Whaler's Cove. Like, yeah, it is Whaler's Cove. And there's a tiny little museum because they used to actually like go whaling from there.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah. back when that was still considered okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after this, we also find out, and I guess I kind of bury the lead here talking about the kids, is that with the custody hearing, they're probably going to put Celeste on the stand, and she can't lie because that's perjury, as Renata, with her all-knowing, wonderful, great lines, you know, she said it's a perjury trap. You know, and then explaining to Reese Witherspoon, who's like, you know, well, why don't you just, you know, plead the fifth? And she's like, that's perjury, babe. Like,
did you also notice she called her Madeline in that scene?
Yes, yes. She still can't get her name right.
Oh, did
right?
She? Like,
it's this far along, like,
yeah.
Really? Right.
Really?
So, do we think it's about to really get really real with the last two episodes left?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting how they're all going to essentially end up back in like the legal system, and it's not the way that anyone would have saw coming, would have seen coming at the beginning of the season,
right?
And I think that that's interesting and well done.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, who do we think will be the first to break?
I mean, Bonnie.
Yeah, Bonnie. I mean, she just wanted to tell the truth since the jump.
She has, and I think. With the whole the drowning thing, and was she walking to the police station to confess tonight? Because I kind of thought that's what she was doing.
Was in the actual episode.
That was in the actual episode, yeah.
Okay, because we saw somebody leaving.
We did. I was gonna.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess we can go for it now. What the hell was Corey doing leaving the police station?
Oh, is that what was happening?
Yeah. He was walking out with an officer. So did they call him in? Was he getting escorted out? Is he an informant? Like, was he sent there to like spy on Jane and like get her to confess to it? Like, what was he doing?
He's like an undercover cop. I'm going to be so bummed. I literally wrote in my notes, I must have looked down. Because first of all, that closing sequence was really not very good. And then I was like,
why is
the last shot of Corey? I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, because he walked out of the police station as Bonnie was walking past it or up to it or something.
Ah, so see, I must have looked away and I missed the shot that connected that's where he was. I was just like, why is he standing in front of a car?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because that's like the real little police station in Carmel, which is next to Monterey. And it's funny because as Bonnie's walking up to it, there are like these three like thuggish looking guys who just like they just in Carmel, they just don't exist. There's just literally no one that looks like that. Also, one of them is wearing a wife beater. And I was like, it's too cold in Carmel to wear a It's like never gets above 65. It's always funny.
This is
like,
problematic. You do not wear tank tops at nighttime in Carmel. Seriously.
What's with the othering? Come on, guys. Let's get it right here.
Even during the day, you don't really walk around in a tank top. But that street that you see with that island, Frank used to work in a restaurant on that street. It's like, oh, hey.
Oh, that's real cool.
Yeah, that's fun. But so I my theory about what Corey was doing is less like conspiracy based. I think that, you know, we had the scene with him and Jane where they sort of like start to make out and then she breaks down. I think that Corey went to the police to report that she was raped.
Oh,
and I think that he had, you know, quote unquote, the best intentions because he is the good guy, but you don't do that.
See, I don't think that at all.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, I want that to be true, but I don't see.
I think that's equally terrible, though, because that's a horrible thing to do. Like, you don't report somebody else's rape.
Right.
That's right. Well, let's cross that bridge if.
Like, 9 years ago.
Let's cross that bridge if that's what happens, let's discuss that next week, if that theory comes to term. I kind of disagree with that theory, Shani. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. But if, because, I mean, it could be, we could get the same result, because the problem is, if he just, like, all innocently, I'm 12 and don't know how the world works, goes to the cops and is like, you know, wants to report that his girlfriend was raped however many years ago, then that could start off a whole thing, like, okay, raped by whom? Oh, the guy that just died? Like, that's going to add information
Well, and see, that's why I think it would be bad if he's an informant. Or I think they could have, like, hauled him in because she's trying to, Quinlan is trying to get to them. And that's why, because he was escorted out walking with a police officer.
I did not see that police officer.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch.
I just finished rewatching it 45 minutes ago. So he's walking out of the police station down the steps with an officer. Whether or not that was to show, hey, he was leaving the station because there's a cop next to him and he wasn't just walking down random stairs or not. That's why I thought for the first time I watched it, I thought for sure, like, oh my God, he's spying on her. Like, he's there like a plant by Quinlan, or they got to him or something. And then when I watched it today, I was like, no, it looks like he's like being walked out of the building, which is what they probably would have done if they had called him in to question him about something. So
impossible. I guess we will find out. Perhaps this week. If not the week after.
Yeah.
Yep. We've got two more chances to find out.
Two more.
Yep.
Two more. But that said, I think shit's about to go down.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, so Madeline and Ed, right? We kind of talked about it a little bit with the couple's therapy and the scene in the car. I feel like Madeline was really like actually making breakthroughs and spilling her heart out when she was saying, you know, my next mistakes will be brand new ones. And I loved that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just talking that she really loves him, wants to be married to him. And you know, she must have low self-esteem or hate herself or something. Like, I feel like Madeline has shown a bit more self-awareness than she had previously, in a way, but I don't know what it's going to take for Ed to want to work things out with her. Like, he clearly hasn't gotten over that out of his system, and I kind of like dickish Ed in a way, because it feels real, but at the same time, and I loved when with Nathan, he was just like, yeah, why can't we just be comfortable not liking each other? And he's like, hey, nut fuck. And then like turns around. That was so funny, actually.
Nathan is the worst. Why is he even there? He's so pointless.
To give us,
he can call people nut fuck.
Yeah, to give us the word nut fuck. But anyway, are we going to see Ed and Madeline reconcile this season?
I think so. I mean, I think it's just going to take him time. And yeah. I think by the end, he'll start to...
come around.
Yeah, between the two of them, like I feel like Ed feels more authentic to me. Like, it feels like he is being very genuine in his anger. Where,
right,
as Madeline, yes, we're seeing a more honest and open Madeline than what we've seen in the past. But I still feel like there's still a bit of her holding back, and some of the language that she's choosing to use to like express this stuff does feel very like canned and prepared. You know, it's like the sort of, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's because my parents' marriage didn't work out and my marriage to Nathan was not to be believed. Like, who actually says that when they're like genuinely like struggling to work through something that's really deeply embedded into their code?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
And even like the beauty of the, like, if I fuck up again, it won't be infidelity. Like, all my future mistakes will be brand new ones. That also feels like it's a beautiful line, but it's a line. And it's something that you probably rehearse. That's not something you're just,
but that's Madeline,
out of your mouth off the top of your head. Yeah. But it doesn't feel as authentic as Ed's anger. And I think his anger is justified.
Right. No, that's a great point too. I don't really have a counter to that. You know what was genuine from Madeline? Throwing an ice cream cone at Mary Louise that got cut out of the episode.
All the best parts of this episode hit the cutting room floor.
Seriously. I don't know if anybody out there listening has seen, I saw it on Twitter, but I know Amanda said there was an article. And there, at the end of that scene, when she tells Abigail that Mary Louise is a psychopath and they have the ice cream cones, there's pictures of her throwing the ice cream at Mary Louise. And she's making this awesome face, and it's just great.
It's pretty good. hero.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's got to be a deleted scene. Director's cut. Shandy's going to be in the director's cut and the ice flying ice cream in the director's cut.
I feel like that was probably you know what? Let's just go for broke on this take and let's just do something crazy outlandish. Yeah. Like, Reese, why don't you just, we'll end the scene. You throw the ice cream cone. And like in reviewing the footage, you're like, oh, yes, no, this is a bit much. Yes. We can't put this in the episode. Can't put it there.
Yeah, no, so I do think that Ed will eventually come around. But the question is, will we have potentially a threesome with Tori first?
Okay, yes. Okay,
wow, so what was that about?
The episode ends and she's like, here's my new boobs and let me rub your back or something. Like,
right. And get shots.
In this completely public place. Let me come on to you.
While my husband is like, watching.
Right. In the most grossly soap opera way I can think of.
Yeah.
It really was. Do we think Ed's going to do anything? I don't think Ed's going to do anything.
I don't think Ed's going to do anything. He's going to think about it and then he's not going to.
Yeah.
And then in the past. Well, when she walked up, I mean, maybe if she had just come up by herself. But then when we see that he's there, and then we're like, oh, are they gonna have like a healing foursome?
Bar fight.
This is also why I think that like ending sequence, usually they're very good. This one just felt like they shook up the eight ball and was like,
Well, you know, usually
it was like a key party of shots. They're like, let's see, what are we got in here?
Usually ending sequences like are what everybody, like they're montages of what everybody is doing at the same time. And this one jumped around from like afternoon and nighttime. And it was a little bit all over the place. But I loved they used My Morning Jacket song, right?
They did.
And I really liked the whole thing. But yes, I agree. It was definitely a little all over the place.
Victory Dance is the name of the My Morning Jacket song they used.
And then real quick, there's not a whole lot on the Renata front, but poor Renata doesn't get to do the magazine.
She doesn't get to have her showdown with Mary Louise.
Okay. Oh my God. So the magazine thing, we had this great Renata line. She's like, women were supposed to be on each other's sides and they're backstabbing sluts.
Yes. I was like, Renata.
I know, she's great. But then, Mary Louise, she just totally completely shuts her down and owns her with a simple line as, what happened to your furniture?
Where's your furniture?
It's just such a big house.
That was great.
Like dressing her down.
We're just going through a little bankruptcy now.
And then she asks her, don't you work, Renata? And just, oh my God, the whole thing was very interesting.
Yeah, it's like you think you know how this is going to go, but then it doesn't. Yeah.
I knew that she was going to have to get the best of her in some way, because there's no way Mary Louise is in any scene and isn't winning.
Mary Louise, the sociopath.
Yes. But then she has a nice little pool day with Amabella, which, you know, actually might be better for Amabella than anything that her mom has ever tried to do for her with money, like big parties Dr. Bo Peep and all that. Like,
your moment.
Yeah. And it was really nice to see that. Like when she tells her, sweetie, money is everything isn't about money. Well, it is, but it isn't.
Right. It's like we have to still, like, Renata has a brand. We got to stick with that.
We got to stay on brand here.
You know, she was like, well, money's not everything. Like, that would not ring very true for that character at all.
No. But she tried, bless her heart.
Bless her heart.
And then as far as Bonnie goes, Bonnie kind of, we see a lot more of her past. She has it out with her father and she asks him, but you know, did you protect me? Which also calls back to the Max and Josh telling Celeste that they're going to protect her. And she's like, you know, you don't have to protect me. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Like that kind of protection, parents protecting children protecting parents kind of thing. But yeah, so Bonnie's whole thing, and you know, poor Nathan gets her the treadmill.
show. Just stupid, stupid Nathan.
And I think
stupid, poorly acted Nathan.
I think that we could probably all agree that, you know, if you're living in a beautiful out community with wonderful weather and you're an outdoor runner, you probably, the last thing you want is to get on a treadmill.
So, you know, for the one day a year it rains.
Yeah. Right. But okay, yeah, so she has it out with her dad, and then, you know, he tells her that he was protecting her by doing whatever he could to make the rage go away for you, for me, for her. We see that Bonnie has a little bit of whatever it is that her mom has, where she starts to see. So we see windshield wipers in the rain, and then I think we see water, right? So yeah, are we made
light?
Yeah. I guess she's kind of seeing the drowning vision that her mom is seeing. And then it ends with her mom saying, kill me. And do we think that her mom really said, kill me? Or do we think that it was imagined because of what's weighing on Bonnie's conscience? And imagining her mom saying, kill me, is what kind of led her to the police station at the end.
I think it's real.
You think it's real? Why would she want her to kill her?
I don't know if she meant it literally, but I think to have that be like just one of those outside of reality scenes feels like almost more like a horror movie to me, you know? Like, I feel like it doesn't ring true to the series. Like, it feels really out of step.
Yeah. Well, it has to be important because they named the episode after it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't quite put my finger, like, I don't have a better explanation.
Gotcha.
But I just feel like it feels less weird to have that be something she actually said in real life instead of like in something that Bonnie is envisioning.
Yeah. And for me, I just took it kind of on like just the literal level of like she just had like a massive stroke and like can't really talk anymore and function. Mm-hmm. And so like maybe she's just really miserable. But then it of course hits a nerve because Bonnie has killed at least a person.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I would go. Yeah, Shandy, I'd go with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, does anyone have anything else about this? Otherwise, we got a little bit of feedback.
There was a book in this episode, Born to Run,
which I thought
was
interesting. I believe that was when they were kayaking and somebody was giving it back to somebody else. I just wrote Born to Run.
I believe that was the book that Nathan left for Bonnie on the treadmill.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is it's a fun read.
Oh, fantastic. You recommend it?
Yeah. It's a really good story.
Good. Okay. So a little bit of feedback from the Facebook group. And Kim said to Mandy, that couple's retreat would be more aptly named Express Divorce Encounter Group. Jay said, Shandy watch is complete. Yay. And then as they were trying to discuss whether or not that was you, and Elena said that this was the closest I have come to anyone resembling her, but those beautiful red curls are pretty hard to miss.
Truth.
Thanks, girl.
And then Rose said, totally recognize Shandy, best acting of the episode, strong yet understated.
Hard to be the straight person in a scene.
It really is. I mean,
be the rock from which the action is pushing off totally. From.
Yeah.
It's you walk straight. Vital.
Yeah. Don't trip.
You were carrying props. So you had to act with props. That's very hard.
Jack said, I'm new to the party, but I have a couple of theories. I'm sure they've already been brought up, but I want to throw them out there. I think we're going to see more women that Perry attacked coming forward. I also think every time we see Perry FaceTiming Celeste, it's after he's attacked another woman. I also believe that Mary Louise knows all about what her son has done.
That's interesting.
I love those theories. I love them all. I don't know if I believe they will all come true, but I love them all.
I could see more attackers of Perry coming forward.
Yes. And we did get that from Mary Louise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From her victim blaming whole thing. Yeah.
I could see that too. I could see the FaceTiming thing because he has, you know, that's kind of like the, you know, I'm sorry, baby, I won't do it again, even though she doesn't know, you know,
yes,
what it is, oh, kind of God. Thing. I don't think Mary Louise knows. I think that Mary Louise lives in her bubble of whatever she wants to believe being true, and reality is something that's saved for Fox News. So I just don't know if...
Well, what if she's in denial? Not that she, you know, because we still
she's
remember,
clearly
didn't something,
in denial.
Didn't something happen with Perry's brother, some sort of accident
yeah.
that we don't know?
Right.
I think there's still a chance that, like, it could have been something Perry did.
Yeah. Which I think we'll find out more. Why can't they just get her to talk about that on the stand next week?
Oh, I think that maybe is being held back for some season finale goodness.
All right, that's a good point. Then we had a whole bunch of praise for Meryl Streep. Janet said, "Oh my God, what happened? Where's all your furniture?" Priceless scene with Laura Dern and Meryl Streep. It is absolutely delightful every episode to watch how they used Meryl Streep in this series. Every scene she is in has purpose and is not wasted. Her transformation into the Mary Louise character has stunned me at every turn. It is brilliant to have her exchange withering dialogue with the outstanding female leads in this series. Again, where's the furniture? That was great. Like, with a simple, quietly delivered, she shut her down. I mean, that was great.
Yep.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
And then Christy had commented, "They always think they can control the conversation, and Mary Louise turns it around on them so fast they're in shock. Amazing." Mama G said, "Just watch the episode. Meryl Streep takes my breath away, and what's up with Bonnie and her mother?"
Yeah.
Very, very complicated.
Complicated relationship.
But I think it is interesting that they chose to make the abusive relationship between the mother and the daughter.
Yes. And I think we've talked about that before, that it goes to show just the importance of parents and how abuse doesn't have to just come from the male parent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
And then Janet also said, "My guess is Huey's psychic gone bad with a healthy dose of child abuse thrown in, the new age version of the wacky evangelical parent who abuses their child, trying to get the evil spirits out of them. Scary stuff." And she was responding to Mama G.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do we think we'll explore more of the Bonnie mother-daughter relationship right now, or do we think that the action's about to head in a total other direction of the legal Perry sense? Legal / Perry sense. Where
I think we have not seen the last of their relationship, but I think it will take a backseat.
Okay. I kind of feel the same way.
Yeah. I think it will sort of move down in the hierarchy of story arcs, because I think it's now pretty clear what motivated Bonnie's reaction and why she pushed Perry down the stairs. So I think it served its purpose.
Yeah. Agreed.
I don't feel completely satisfied. Like, yeah, it'd be nice to get like a little more, but yeah, I think it's laid its groundwork. It's done its job.
Yes. I thought it was well done too, the way they kind of unfolded the story. Shandy?
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. I think we'll move into the courtroom a little bit more. And then, you know, we still have all of next episode and then the entire season finale.
Right.
For some of those ends to be tied.
Well, and do we know if the season finale is going to be 90 minutes? I feel like they usually do a slightly longer last episode.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a great point.
I do not know.
Okay.
I was going to say just one note to go back to the Meryl Streep of it all. I was on the HBO Go website today and I noticed, I was on the show page. So HBO.com, whatever. Anyway, and I went down to the very bottom and they have like the cast, or you can click on a link and go to the cast and look at they have the pictures of all the main people with the character name and the actor name. And I just thought it was funny because the only character who didn't have a name was Meryl Streep. Like, it's like her character name is there, Mary Louise, but her actual name, the name of the actress, is not listed. And I was just like, oh, yeah, that checks out. Like, you don't need to say that.
That checks out.
So yeah, we're not the only ones. And everyone writing in to us, we're not the only ones thinking that she's big. Apparently she just doesn't even need to be named. She's that big.
Yeah, you just know.
Yeah, you just know. Shandy, I will tell you, though, that when we did not watch, we forgot, the first time we watched it, we forgot to watch the next week on part of the show because we spent the whole time scanning the credits to see if your name popped up at any point.
Oh, did you find
which
it?
Does not, because I didn't talk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that was also another thing. I don't remember if I said this on the podcast or not, but when they did send me my big fat check, it was made out to Shandy Lamparee. And so I was like, Jesus Christ. And then it was like, well, if I do get a credit, like, it's going to be incorrect. And I emailed back the person who had contacted us from casting.
Accidental
stage.
Just to
be like, hey.
You sort of spelled the name kind of wrong.
Because I didn't want to be like, so in the credits, make sure you get it right. Because I didn't want to act like I was like getting a credit. But I was just like, so the check came and just wanted to let you guys know for your records, because it's like it cleared at the bank, but just, you know, just whatever, stupid.
That's so funny.
But I never did hear back from him. So the whole time I was like, if I do get a credit, is it going to be me or is it going to be almost me? Now I don't have to worry about that either.
Yeah. Like accidental stage names. That's how they happen.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a common mistake.
All right. And then to wrap the feedback up, we have an email from Maggie.
All right. And Maggie says, hiya, broads. Loving the show, both yours and the TV show. I watched episodes 3 and 4 today. Wow. The disco outfits were amazing.
True that.
Truth. I'm sorry. I didn't even include that in my note. Oh, my God. The show, the outfits, the party. Perfection. The wigs, loved all of it. All of it. Anyway, back to the email. I was looking around after, and the internet loved Mary Louise being slapped, which was amazing. Another theory I saw, not mine, but I thought it was interesting. Mary Louise will kill Bonnie. Then it comes full circle. I really wish the season wasn't half over. Bye-bye.
I think Bonnie will survive another season.
Yeah, I really don't want that to happen, and I don't think we're gonna get another murder.
Right.
You know, I don't think this is gonna be like every season of Big Little Lies somebody dies. I don't think that's necessarily gonna be the thing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get another season.
Yeah.
No, this is making a lot of money and there's no more Game of Thrones. So we're getting another season, guys.
But like, you don't want it. Like, these are all big actresses that have like other things they could be doing. And you don't want this to be like another like Broadchurch where like just each season gets a little like sadder and then you forget how great the first season was.
Right. Well, we'll see. I feel like they would have announced it if there was not another season.
Yeah, and I do. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to depend a lot on probably the next two episodes.
And the reception to them, yeah.
And the reception, like what the actual story ends up being, and then how that's received. And they probably not, like, they've got to know if the ending, you know, is really great. If they've written something really well.
Right.
They probably know that. And then... yeah, so we'll see.
Cool. Well, thank you to everybody who contributed. If you'd like to give us any feedback in the future, you can give us a call at 331-276-2373, or you can email us thebroadcasters3@gmail.com. Shandy, you talked a lot about local stuff before we discussed it and during it. Is there anything else for the local trip section of the show?
Just that sort of beginning part where we get nutfuck with Nathan and Ed. That part of the trail that they're on. I go there all the time. Like I have trained many, many miles right there. And it's like on the way to Lover's Point, which is where the cafe is.
Gotcha.
But it's a little bit a ways. And it's just interesting to think like, okay, what day was that? Because they had to have like closed down the trail And how did they do that without everyone in town knowing about it? But somehow they did.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Music. Let's talk a little bit about music before we get out of here.
All right. Let's talk about music. So the first big musical moment, which is I added because it was a highlight of the episode for me.
Yes, me too.
Yes. A little Natural Woman by Carole King when Madeline and Ed were driving to the retreat. To the point I actually, like, in my abridged rewatch this evening, I had to go back and make sure because the drive back from the retreat, they're playing the song Baby by Donnie and Joe Emerson, which is also playing at the end credits. And when I saw that, I was like, no, it's not. It's Carole King. And I had to go back and confirm, but it is. It's two separate car rides. There were two car rides in this episode. Mm-hmm. One song was in one song was in the other. But the thing that I found the most interesting about that is that we learned that Madeline doesn't know how to sing along to a song. It's not call and response.
When I saw that scene, I was like, she's come a long way from her June Cash days.
Right. Doesn't know how to sing to the radio. It's pretty unfortunate. Great use of that song, though. Carole King could be in everything as far as I'm concerned, and it just makes it better. She just makes it better.
She does. She does. Yes. But then we also had a song by Aretha, who, you know,
who famously who made her. Natural Woman famous.
And that's A Change Is Gonna Come. But actually, Sam Cooke version of it, wasn't it?
Well, Sam Cooke did the original, and it is one of my all-time favorite songs. If you haven't heard that original Sam Cooke version, pause this podcast, go listen to it.
Yeah, it's a great
song. Wait. Okay, wasn't that amazing? I know. But it's just like one of those really like uplifting and soul-crushing in equal measure songs. Mm-hmm. Like it makes you very hopeful for the future, but it also makes you very, very sad.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what that scene was about. So I think it was just like a perfect pairing. Mm-hmm. And I never heard the Aretha version before. So that was pretty rad.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say Brooklyn's in the bat. Brooklyn's in the house.
Yeah, sorry. It's okay. Been a busy, busy evening here.
It's okay. It's okay.
And then If You Leave Me Now by Chicago. Oh, my God.
That scene was so funny.
Which is
probably, it was Cash Cow.
Yes. Yeah, Bonnie's Cash Cow of singing for sleep apnea while lying on your back. But
that makes sense.
Was a great use of a really beautifully, wonderfully cheesy song.
Yes.
And then while Corey and Jane have their first romantic rendezvous, the song that was playing in the background is It's a Wonderful Life by Sparkle Horse.
Okay.
Which just that scene in general, I just thought was beautifully sad.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I think it was a lovely pairing there. And then lastly, as we already discussed a little earlier in the show, over the closing culminating montage, Victory Dance by My Morning Jacket, which sort of similar to Carole King. Anytime you have My Morning Jacket in your show, it's probably just going to make it better.
Good times, good times. Awesome. All right, well, here we are. We've got two more episodes to go in season two. Next week, we will be, I will be recording from San Diego because I'm going to Comic-Con. And we will have a special guest that will also be on the show. So for the reviewer who thought that there were four terrible women on this show, next week there will in fact be four women. And so, we will laugh all of the laughs at all the things we say that aren't funny.
So really that person was just listening to us from the future.
From the future.
Kind of cool. Props to you.
But yes, so stay tuned. Do we want to announce who's going to be on? Well, let's hold on.
I like the idea of keeping it
We'll keep it a surprise. And then that is... But so stay tuned for that next week. And speaking of reviews, if you would like to leave us a review on iTunes, a positive review, we would really appreciate that as well. And if you ever want to email us any constructive criticism you have, we'll take it and we will learn from it. Send it to thebroadcasters3@gmail.com. I think that's about it. Thank you to the patrons, especially the ones that contribute a certain level, and that would be Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Rickner, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with a Plan, Ed the Creepy Mailman, and Drake the Distributor. Thank you guys so much. If you'd like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/JaneJack. That helps all of us out. If you can't get enough of us and all of our pointless laughing, you can check us out on The Broadcast, which is the other podcast we do. And we just talk about current events and pop culture things. And we do lots of fun stuff over there. We laugh a lot. We look at dirty Wikipedia pictures. It's great. Okay. But check us out there. You can search for us in iTunes, The Broadcast, and then it'll say like Amanda, Shani, and Colleen, and you'll see our... We'll be there. But yeah, I think that does it. Does anybody else have anything? Did I cut anybody off for any great thoughts that they have? Last minute theories for next week? Cool.
Nope.
All right. Well, on that note, my name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Bye, everybody. Peace out.
Bye.
Bye.